In early March, Wyoming Catholic College, like most colleges in America, canceled all on-campus classes and, like most colleges, sent students home to resume classes at a distance. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to The After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. Now, it's one thing to have a college that specializes in distance learning, and there are schools today with no campus and no resident students. It's quite another to retool nearly a semester of classes from face-to-face learning to distance learning. Our faculty put forth an heroic effort, and the semester finished well. In that effort, they were led by our dean, Kyle Washit. I asked Dean Washit to talk to us about the semester, and to begin by telling us a bit about the philosophy of learning that underlies Wyoming Catholic College. Professor Washit, before we start talking about distance learning, tell us about the understanding of college education that we have in our philosophic vision statement here at Wyoming Catholic.
At Wyoming Catholic College, in the vision statement, it proposes a complex view of education. In the first place, it stresses we're not principally in the business of distilling information. We're in the business of forming habits in the students. Now, those habits require them to have some information to practice those things with. Certainly, we want them to know times and dates and certain important details. But fundamentally, education is not being able to recite what the encyclopedia or Wikipedia says. Education is a habit of thinking and reflecting on a broader range of topics, knowing the particular disciplines. We then further say that there's additional habits that are beyond merely reflective intellectual habits that are of importance, such as habits of sense, habits of imagination, habits of memory, spiritual habits, physical habits. And while not all of those habits are the same primary focus of the college, the PVS commits us to developing those habits in some way or another. So that would include moral habits, that would include, again, habits of being aware of your experiences in nature, that would include habits of being in community and having conversation. Given that, the vision of education we have at WCC is it's an immersive experience. From the time the freshmen come in until the time they graduate, they are immersed in the outdoors, they're immersed in community life, immersed in conversations with the professors, and we see, therefore, the education that takes place at the college as not limited to the classroom, but the classroom as a key component of the overall educational experience.
So it's highly relational.
Absolutely.
And how did we move from a highly relational model of education to distance learning that can be almost entirely non-relational?
Very grudgingly. That is certainly not something we wanted to do, nor something that we thought was an easy transition. So all of the colleges across the country had the difficulty with students getting used to the new forum, professors getting used to the technology and those communication issues and glitches. But we were aware that in addition to those complications, we would have fundamentally the impossible task of moving an immersive relational educational experience to a compartmentalized, technologically accessed education. And so from the beginning, we realized we're going to fall short of what we want. Some things we had to suspend. There was no way for the students to do their horse riding course during quarantine.
I believe that you suggested that we give everyone a hobby horse to
trot
around the living room.
I did. I thought that you could jump over couches and do various things, but the horse instructors vetoed that idea. Similarly, we had to suspend our outdoor program. The students had been planning their week-long outdoor trips, and we canceled class just before they were going on those trips. And since that's a huge component of the outdoor education course, we had to suspend those. So some of those courses were just dropped. Beyond that, we had to figure out ways to try to create communal experiences of learning when the students were scattered far and wide. Now that's much harder to do. So on the one hand, I encourage the students that at some level, they're taking a new step into the educational program. When you read the Desert Fathers, for example, they always make this distinction about the two kinds of monasticism, the communal monasticism, the communal intellectual life, and the hermit intellectual life. And the hermit intellectual life is for the big boys, right? When you are able to go live by yourself, study, pray, read, all on your own, and hit those peaks of contemplation and growth and virtue, then you've really arrived. But for the most of us mere mortals, you need to do it in community. By necessity, our students got thrown into a kind of eremitical intellectual life, which is not impossible, but really challenging. So in the first place, that puts a huge burden on the students. The students all of a sudden need to take responsibility for creating the environment in which they learn. So we talked to them about that, what to do. How do you read deeply, passionately, and well when you don't have classmates to read with? When you don't immediately have someone you can learn, lean over to and ask a question about the reading. What kind of reading is that? There you've got to be taking notes. You've got to have a kind of active role that you don't have otherwise. Secondly, then I encourage them to try to create opportunities for the conversations that they would be having outside of class. Try to organize small group meetings over Google Meets to meet with a group of students and have a conversation about a reading that they had done. The sophomores, for example, had planned to meet every Friday during Lent and read a little bit out over lunch, read a little bit from the Little Flowers of St. Francis, a collection of tales of the early Franciscans, and eat soup and bread together. That had been what their goal was coming off of their sophomore retreat to do for the rest of Lent here in Lander. So they tried to keep doing that. On Fridays at lunch, they would call in a set time. They'd all have their soup and bread separately together. They'd take turns reading out loud and discuss the Little Flowers. Some of the juniors had a standing invitation of a noon lunch hour. They all called in at the same time, and they talked about the day's classes, their other thoughts, to try to create this experience. And the more successfully they did that, study groups, outside of small group class meetings, etc., the more they were able to benefit.
Well, and I guess some of them were actually living together.
We
had some communities.
Yeah, really, really key that a number of the students responded to this saying they didn't want to just go home because they knew the difficulty. So a group of students went and lived on a beach house together in North Carolina. They stayed sort of self-isolated as a group and lived their life in common together. Other students went to family homes, so you'd have these little pockets of groups of three or four students, sometimes more, living in some kind of community to cultivate this intellectual life.
Now, what were the good things that were learned? I mean, this wasn't all pure challenge. Were there ideas or methods that will transfer back to the classroom, do you think?
Yeah. So, for example, we found that the videos that we made to talk about the complex math concepts were a huge hit. During math class, when you're talking about math, you have the experience of you miss it, but you feel like you might be the only one who missed it. You get tired of asking the teacher to repeat himself over and over again, sort of shrink into yourself. There's a bunch of these instructional videos available. The students could rewind, they could replay, they could watch over and over. And so we're actively thinking, what do we do with these great instructional videos we made for non-Euclidean geometry, statistical analysis, and the rest? How do we implement those in an effective way as part of the student learning experience going forward, whether they all get copies of these videos to use in their study resources or the like. Other experiences, I think the student experience of reading was really good. The students that applied themselves to their reading really saw how incredibly that opened up. And lastly, I think the students, all of them came away with clearly seeing something that they hadn't seen clearly before. That whereas, say, other schools, you might have social life and then study life and sort of oppose those two, here the students came to realize that the community is itself an instrument of the education and saw clearly how much learning took place when they were doing it as a community. And I think they're looking forward to being able to take advantage of that intentionally going forward.
I did my doctorate entirely distance. Now, we had 2 weeks a year when we got together, which was so important. It's a challenge to drag yourself up to the nearest university library and plop yourself down and spend the day reading.
It is exactly right. And again, one of the other things I think that came through to me talking to the students was how successful we've been in some of the countercultural things we do here at Wyoming Catholic College. We encourage the students, put down the cell phones, don't get stuck on your screen, be present to the people around you, have real conversations with them, enjoy them. And here, the students, the feedback I would get when I met with each class over the course of the semester, we'd have these various Zoom class meetings. And one of the things the students talked about was the weirdness of having to pretend like they weren't home. Having to deliberately ignore the people who were physically around them to try to invest themselves in this educational life. And that every ounce of their being kind of recoiled against this. Now, from what I hear, the vast majority of people living in the world don't have the immediate instinct of revulsion at spending a bunch of time on the screen when they're at home with their family. But our students immediately saw the disconnect for the kind of community they learned and then the kind of thing that they now had to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, having really tried it out, and I have a vested interest in this question, being the director of distance learning, what are some of the benefits you saw?
Sure. Well, I think we did some really neat things. Let me say there's one other additional thing we did using a Google Classroom that I thought had we saw some neat developments that maybe we could use going forward in the future. What we did is we created this Google Classroom that we called the Alcinous's Banquet. And that's a quote from, or a reference to the story in Homer's Odyssey, where Odysseus goes to Alcinous's hall and sort of has this experience of the peak of civilization on his way home to Ithaca. And he stands up and he gives a toast to this experience of being in the hall and telling stories and sharing this common life. And he says, depending on which translation you read, this is something like perfection or among the finest things in life, depending on which how you read that. And so we thought that there was this way in which the Google Classroom experience was captured by the metaphor of Odysseus stopping at this resting place that wasn't home. It wasn't the community he was looking for, but it gave him refreshment, it gave him encouragement, and it enabled him to get the rest of the way to Ithaca. And so I think at some level that's how we think about distance learning. Distance learning isn't home. But on the same level, it need not be prison if it's done well. It can be a kind of resting place, a place of refreshment, encouragement, to help you on your journey, on your odyssey, as you're looking for the resting place. And so there's all sorts of things that we saw that were really delightful. A movie watching experience where you can all watch the same film and then have a live discussion about it. In some ways, more easily than you could in person. You can all see the film easily, you can all hear the film easily, and you're able to have more people have that experience and share in that conversation. Students that were incredibly quiet had the time and space to collect their thoughts and make a post and contribute to a conversation. Certain activities allowed on this Alcinous website for seniors, juniors, freshmen, and sophomores to interact across the way, staff to get involved, faculty to get involved. So there's kind of artificial lines that maybe can arise when you're in the daily grind in person that you can break through in the course of a distance education environment. We found there were ways to tap into the huge amount of online resources that are out there. Very often we think of getting on the internet and using it to waste time. But certainly especially during the coronavirus, there were free Shakespeare plays available. There were tours of museums. There were, the Met was having their recurring new operas that they would post. There were spiritual resources, live streamed liturgies, breviaries, various things to access. And being able to put those together for a student and sort of guide them to the places that can actually nourish you on the internet, these places that can contribute to this quest for community, I think we found really, really positive. So as I think about what distance ed looks like going forward, I think, yeah, thinking of a model that enables people to use it as a halfway house to take advantage of all the resources that are sort of speak along the way on the journey and open up new potential for in-person community, I think is a great model.
Well, this being the end of the school year, normally I find that I at least am exhausted, and I'm sure you are too, and fall seems a blessed long way away. Is it any different for you this year?
This year, I am maybe more exhausted. The experience of recreating a school online was not what I'd anticipated doing this spring semester. And I think in the early times, I was more aware of how far we were falling short and just frustrated by it. That being said, with the seniors coming back and being blessed to be able to do a small, careful in-person graduation with the seniors, there's this uptick in an energy that I think I'm feeling right now that I maybe don't always feel at graduation after all the grading's done.
And then the students are going to be coming back, and we'll have full classrooms and full dining rooms. And
That is exactly it.
I think it'll be a great pleasure.
We're actively thinking about what are all the steps we put in place to make the in-person education work this fall. But I think the energy that we're devoting to that is a sign that how excited we all are to finally be back together come August.
Each year, I have the opportunity to introduce our distance learning programs to the parents of incoming freshmen. And I always tell them that it's not fair that their children should have all the fun. And since our students' parents are not able to attend our face-to-face classes here in Lander, at least they can study Dante, medieval spirituality, C.S. Lewis, religious liberty, and other topics through our distance learning programs and through this podcast. In addition, they can get some face-to-face time with our professors at our adult school, the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought. This year, the school will be held August 9th to 14th here in Lander, and we'll be looking at Beauty is Truth, Science, and the Catholic Imagination. For more information on these distance programs and how you can be a part, please visit our website, wyomingcatholic.edu. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.